for ABC News in New York at the 2011 Talk Radio Day at the United Nations. I'm Dan Patterson. Pleased to be joined this morning by the Japanese ambassador to the United Nations, Mr. Kazu Kodama.
Yes, I am.
I appreciate that. Like I said moments ago, I'm very American, so I hope I didn't mangle your last name too much. This is your first post at the United Nations. You're the incoming ambassador. How new are you to this job, and is this tell me a little bit about your background.
Well, good morning, and Mr. Patterson, thank you very much. I'm delighted to be in this program. I have been in the Foreign Service for the last 36 years. So while I served many foreign countries, including the United States, UK, Hong Kong, China, India, and so on. Yes, this is my very first assignment here at the UN. Yet, UN has been always somewhere in my mind, because UN is always, I think, is a very important place, center stage for all the nations in the world to address all issues of global interest. So I'm very happy to be here.
And you're coming into the United Nations at a reasonably tumultuous time in Japan. I want to talk a little bit about the tsunami and the earthquake and the Fukushima disaster. I'm less interested in the policy and what you're doing about the disaster, but how do you communicate a massive national disaster, not just in terms of the natural disaster, but the man-made disaster? How do you communicate issues of need and policy changes that may come from the disaster that we saw at Fukushima? How do you communicate that to the international community and here at the United Nations?
Well, since the day one, of course, March the 11th, when this unprecedented earthquake and then tsunami hit the eastern part of Japan, of course, my government did all it could. And first and foremost, of course, to help the people in the affected area to seek a shelter and to provide all the needs, I think, supplies and food, medicine, water, everything. And in the meantime, of course, the UN system was fully alerted. And their response was, admirable. I think OCHA here and all the UN humanitarian organizations took steps to send their people. And also, we are very grateful. All in all, I think we did receive more than 130 nations was of sympathy and supplies and support and everything. So we are very grateful. Now, we actually, in Tokyo especially, almost every day, every few hours, I think, organized a press conference, and also through the media to share the information of what's taking place all along, I think, to the international community. And also on top of that, of course, my government, almost every day, I think, convened also a meeting in which we invited the diplomats from all over the world who are based in Tokyo to share relevant information concerning the safety, of the people in the area in Japan.
Sure, and Japan is a very unique nation, and it's a nation that is not, it's very dissimilar than say a sub-Saharan African nation. And while the need of the people is equally great in any disaster, Japan has the infrastructure and the resources to manage that. How do you communicate your need, which is equally great, to the world community? Like, how do you articulate issues of need, given that you are a nation that does have infrastructure and resources? And what is your argument when you come to the world community? What is your argument to them to say you need to help us just as much as you need to help those who don't have the infrastructure and don't have the resources? That's a really tricky thing for you to communicate. How do you do that?
When, of course, this earthquake, the tsunami of the unprecedented magnitude, I think, attacked Japan, of course, we were also in terms of the ensuring a steady supply of lifelines after the disasters, say strikes. We are fairly confident we can do that. So when this happened, I think, yes, we were very grateful to the outpouring offers of assistance from all over the world. But we, I think, certainly, this is, of course, a emergency situation. So you can't really, of course, you couldn't really provide all the maybe a accurate sort of information concerning the very need of support which we expect from the international community. But what the point which I want to emphasize here is we actually, especially at the very initial stage, we were very grateful. Indeed, we welcome all the offers of their willingness to send search and rescue mission. But in the end, of course, I want to emphasize also, we are especially grateful to the U.S. Forces who are based in Japan, in Okinawa, or in any part of Japan. Actually, they are, of course, a very self-sufficient, a self-contained assistance, you know, helicopters and vessels. They were very, very, you know, helpful. So that's how we operated.
Let's shift a little bit to policy issues and regional versus global policy issues. In what way do you see, particularly the emerging Chinese economy and how that's affected the United States? Does that impact your economic policy? In what ways does that impact Japanese economic policy?
Well, maybe a couple of points. Number one, indeed, China is now has overtaken the United States as the Japan's number one trading partner.
Right.
So our economies
exactly where I'm going.
Our economies are so closely interlinked. So the number two, and of course, we are to a certain extent concerned about expanding their sort of defense budget and to further arm, you know, their militaries, I think. But all in all, I think I want to tell you that Japan, of course, views the emerging China, I think, is not as a threat but for the international community, but as, of course, an opportunity for every one of us to, I think, utilize, capitalize on it. So after all, we live in a world of interdependence. We have to cultivate what we call a mutuality of interest involving Japan, U.S., China, or India, or ASEAN, you name it. Yes. That is our strategy, our sort of game plan.
And just to conclude here, as you work your way into your role here at the United Nations, what are your top policy positions? What are the agenda items for Japan over the next 6, 12, and 18 months?
Well, of course, number one, of course, is the issue of security, especially the issue of the denuclearization of Korean Peninsula. So we are concerned about the ongoing DPRK, North Korean policy, not yet to commit itself sincerely the issue of denuclearization of their programs, nuclear or even highly enriched program. So we very much work. We are anxious to work closer, ever closer with the United States, with ROK, Republic of Korea, to engage North Korea to come forward, to come clean, and to comply with all the relevant, you know, UN Security Council resolutions. That's number one. And then also the security issues like Afghanistan. Afghanistan's a real restoration of its economy and back to normalcy is very important, high on our agenda. And then, of course, Middle East peace, of course, is an issue, not only for the Arab world, not only for the Europe or United States, but for Japan too. And then a couple more is, of course, the climate change issue remains one of the top most priority. So we have to, especially now, in the wake of this nuclear accident in Japan, not only Japan, I think international community at large are confronted with a very difficult dilemma. But the answer remains, we believe, that we will continue soul through this program to the listeners in the United States that please now Japan is returning, well, fast recovering from the disaster. And Japan is safe. Japanese food are safe. And the best way for people in the United States or listeners can help Japan to back on track really is to visit Japan. Do visit Japan. You are all welcome. So this is really my message.
Mr. Ambassador, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.